All down. All silent. Going. Go on, sir. Congratulations.
Welcome to the Current Market Insights podcast, brought to you by Harris Partners Real Estate. Each episode, we chat with real estate author and industry leader Peter O'Malley to discuss the current property market conditions and provide insights to assist you on your property journey.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Current Market Insights. I'm your host, Kieran O'Brien, and with me, as always, is my good friend, Mr. Peter O'Malley. Peter, hello.
G'day, Kieran. Great to be with you.
Great to see you, Peter. I want to jump straight in this week and talk about a pretty hot topic. That is migration, particularly skilled migration. It is something the government has spoken about at length over the last, say, 6 to 12 months. It's something that we've touched on the podcast in regards to how it relates to supply and demand in housing. But I'm interested to get your thoughts on what's the current situation with the skilled migration list. What is the government doing to house these people and what proposals do they have in place?
Kieran, this ticked off again this week, this topic, because a report came out saying that the country needs to import tens of thousands of tradies to help us overcome the housing shortage that we're experiencing in our capital cities. The thing about bringing tens of thousands of new tradies into the country is they add to the housing shortage before they fix it. And if you go back to COVID and what happened to the construction industry and how people planned to get themselves through, the construction industry planned to get itself through COVID, a lot of new projects stopped. And very few, particularly massive scale projects, occurred during COVID. Now, that's fine if the population numbers were going to remain steady. But coming out of COVID, we had all-time lows in terms of new dwelling starts, with the government clearly having an agenda in their own mind to flood the country with high immigration to create economic activity and break the labour shortages that are being experienced in the market. So the supply side has been starved at a time that it's copped a demand shock between 2022 and where we are today. So we're now in this ridiculous situation where demand is clearly outstripping supply. And to get more supply, the government is saying we need to add to housing demand by housing tens of thousands of new builders and tradies into the economy. And people sitting at home listening to all of this are up in arms saying, how did we get in this situation where we've got to make the housing crisis worse, before we make it better?
So what does the government have in mind here? Are they just envisioning that let's say a carpenter from somewhere afar comes in with his family and says, okay, we're here now, myself, my wife and my, let's say, three kids for argument's sake, we're here to solve the housing crisis in Sydney, but hang on, we can't even get started on me finding a job or getting to work or finding a sponsor or whatever it may be, because at the moment we actually can't find a house to live in ourselves. So what do these people do when they land in Australia to solve this crisis that unfortunately they are an unwilling part of?
I can't be certain, but I'd imagine that the government are probably targeting a younger demographic than established families from overseas. Moving an established family to another country is a far greater decision than enticing a working age 25-year-old who's fully qualified as a carpenter, electrician, builder, whatever it may be, into the country. So the government didn't come out this week and talk about the needs that the economy needs tens of thousands of new tradies. That was a report by the Housing Industry Association. Where the government do need to cop some blame here is the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, did tell the country over Christmas that he was listening on migration and that they were going to tone back the numbers. And clearly the numbers are coming out now suggesting that the number of new entrants into the country is accelerating, not decreasing, as promised by the Prime Minister. So that's a big problem for him there, because he's got major industries telling him that we need to maintain high immigration into the country to alleviate employment challenges. But the more people that they invite into the country, the worse the housing crisis gets, even if some of those workers are here to try and alleviate the housing crisis. And it all goes back to the fact, as I say, that housing demand is now in front of housing supply because of what happened with the lack of new supply coming out of COVID, and it's just been badly put together.
Okay, so we agree there is a housing crisis and the government, for good or bad, let's assume they're trying to do something about it. Flipping over, though, to the skills shortage, does it not make more sense for the government, Albanese or otherwise, to invest in training young Aussie kids to become tradies, to become builders, to become sparkies?
Too long. There's an immediate need here and now. Yes, in a perfect world, what you've just outlined is correct, but we need new housing next week. A trade takes 4 years.
Sure, but don't we employ governments to utilise a little bit of forward thinking and actually engage in a long-term trajectory for the country's growth as opposed to consistently throwing Band-Aids on problems? It's like trying to use some duct tape to stop a leak in a pipe, and as you plug one bit, another bit pops open and away you go.
Look, that's a noble view that you've just outlined there, Kieran, but the electoral cycle is much shorter than what you've just put forward. So in 18 months, Anthony Albanese needs to go back to the people. And on the current housing crisis that we're experiencing with the surge in immigration, he's going to face enormous electoral issues if he doesn't fix this. So we're at a political crisis stage now where Australians are struggling to house themselves and feed themselves with the cost of living crisis combined with the housing crisis. And it all comes back to, as I say, the origins of it. They've allowed demand to get in front of supply. And if your only solution to increasing the supply is to invite more people in, you're making the problem worse before you make it better. So the government's got a big issue there.
Yeah, they've certainly got some soul searching to do, and they have a lot of work to do in the next 18 months. I think it's a perfect opportunity, Pete, to segue. The migration numbers have increased demand for the limited supply, and as we talked about previously, have put pressure on the rental market. We haven't touched on it for a little while, but I'm wondering if you have a bit of a sense of what's happening in the rental market at the moment, and have we seen a shift in that heat that was in the market, say, 3-4 weeks ago when we last spoke
about
it?
Yeah, look, a good time to take another look at the rental market, Kieran. The peak months for the rental market are January, February, as people reset themselves for the forthcoming calendar year. And this year was no different to any other calendar year where the rental market was very strong through January and February. As we start heading toward Easter and winter is within sight, you do notice that the activity in the rental market does settle down, and that would describe what is happening at the moment. So the sheer weight of numbers that were being experienced at rental open houses through January and February has now subsided, and we're seeing more orderly numbers. And I think after Easter, you may even see that tail off a bit further as we head towards the cooler month, which is traditionally the slowest part of the year for the rental market.
One thing I've noticed doing rental opens on the weekends, Pete, is that when I look at the number of registered people to attend an open home, it's quite sizable on some properties, but the number that actually show up at the house are either completely different people or the number's not quite as high. Do you think that that is a reflection of people, when they're browsing the real estate portals, just blanket, you know, putting everything in their calendar and getting an opportunity to go see it all and then deciding on those they really like? Or are people getting a better opportunity to actually lease a property at the moment so they no longer need to go and look at them all?
I'm not quite sure we're at a point where tenants could say they're getting a better opportunity. I think it's much easier to click a property online and make it one of your favourites or one of your target properties. It's much easier to do that than it is actually to attend the inspection in person on the following Saturday. Events happen, etc. As a realtor, they're a loose indicator, the amount of people that are pre-registered to attend an open house versus the attendees. It's interesting to see that you're getting good numbers, but the numbers don't necessarily correlate with the people who pre-registered. There's probably a bit of tenancy fatigue out there where if you have applied, because it's not straightforward applying for a property, there's a bit of effort involved. And if you're applying for 4 or 5 properties a week and missing out on them, it's understandable that every couple of weeks or so you might take a break from that.
Yeah, interesting thoughts. I've also noticed that a lot of the properties I go to, there are already people who have applied, and it may be the first open home, but that just says to me that there are people out there just, you know, throwing their hat into all of these rings, hoping that they can land one on the other side.
Yeah, so whilst we say this is traditionally a time of year where the rental market begins to cool down, there's no doubt that the rental market is probably slightly stronger this March than what it was last March, and I think that this April will be stronger than what it was last April. So how we describe that is that we're getting higher lows or higher dips in the rental market and higher highs. So make no mistake, overall, the Sydney rental market is in an upward trend. No market moves in any direction in a straight line. It always has periods of consolidation. As discussed, that tends to be in winter in Sydney. But absolutely, we're getting higher lows, which suggests that the underlying demand for Sydney housing is still very high. And that's unsurprising because the government have exceeded their own targets, if you like, in terms of new migrants coming into the country.
Yeah, interesting thoughts. As we wrap up the rental discussion, I wonder, given we've talked about the really strong growth in the market over the last 12 to 18 months, the post-COVID growth, do you think we've now reached a period where, as you say, it gets a little bit quieter? Should we expect that rents will hold relatively stable now until we get towards the busy time at the end of the year? Or do you think there'll still be some gradual increase as some of those leases come off
The rate of growth will definitely settle down. It's a bit hard to tell whether we will flatline in terms of rents here or continue rising. And that does really come down to how many new entrants enter the country. What we must keep in mind about the migrants that are being invited into the country at the moment is they're coming in with very strong currencies relative to the Australian dollar. So when they get here, whilst we're experiencing a cost of living crisis, they're actually finding Australia relatively cheap because of where the Australian dollar is sitting. So they're pretty formidable opponents out there looking for rental properties given where the Australian currency is at the moment.
Great insights into the rental market there, Peter. Thank you. I wanted to pivot, if I can, into more of a sales focus now and talk about lifestyle markets. It's something you have touched on as a strongest segment of the market in previous podcasts, but I'm interested to get your insights into what's actually happening in lifestyle markets at the moment, and is there a definite change or a shift in the market conditions that may indicate that it's a better or a worse opportunity for some people?
Yeah, coming out of COVID, when return to office commenced in earnest, the regional markets, the lifestyle markets, had a bit of a dip as money and population pressure headed back towards the city. Now that that's settled down and there are some people that are still able and wanting to work from home, lifestyle markets, they're performing solidly without being spectacular. I was speaking to some people who are looking at moving to lifestyle markets from the inner city of Sydney in the last week, and they all explained one phenomenon to me that happens in lifestyle markets, which is the exact opposite of what tends to happen in the city markets, and that's overquoting. So in the city markets, as we know, underquoting is just endemic. It's just in agents' DNA to underquote the value of the property, create a bidding war, and then let the best buyer win on the day. Where you see the exact opposite in lifestyle markets, where the vendors quite often will overprice without any deadline on the sale. And essentially what they're looking for is a sucker from Sydney who's cashed up, who comes in, who doesn't understand the natural lay of the landscape and inadvertently overpays for a property. So I think if you are going to sell in Sydney and move to a lifestyle market, you need to be really, really careful of not taking asking prices too literally, because just as it's common in the city for agents to underprice the value of properties by 10 or 20% to attract buyers, it's also equally common in lifestyle markets for vendors to overprice by 10 or 20% hanging out for a Sydney sucker who doesn't do their research.
Do you think there might also be a little bit of psychology at play there, other than hoping there's a Sydney sucker out there? But by overquoting these properties by, say, 10 or 20%, when someone, a slick city dweller, comes down and tries to negotiate on a property and they badger that vendor down by 10%, they feel fantastic because of the bargain they've achieved. And in fact, that vendor's thinking, great, we just got 10% more than we would have got to a local buyer. Do you think that's a genuine tactic to try and keep them at a still relatively elevated price?
Yeah, I have little doubt. That's the full intention of it. And that's why you should always judge your offer based on recent comparable sales, and you should never judge your offer based on what the vendor's asking or what another vendor in the marketplace is asking for a similar property to the one you're interested in. So as I explained it today to the people I was with, is you might go into a lifestyle market. These people were looking up the mountains, for example. You might find three properties that you like two are wildly overpriced and one's modestly overpriced. But make no mistake, relative to the recent sales in that suburb, all three properties are overpriced just to varying degrees. So you should never make your offer based on what a vendor's asking price is. In these lifestyle markets, you must get hold of a list of comparable sales so you know exactly what properties have been trading for and make your offer accordingly.
Well, once again, this comes back to ensuring you do your research, which is something we hammer on every single time we talk, no matter what that research is. As we wrap up then about lifestyle, I'm interested to just get your sense of whether someone moving from, say, Sydney to the mountains or down the coast or whatever it might be, do you think it's worth their while engaging with, a buyer's agent or a local agent to try and assist them to get into the local market?
What I encourage these people to do today is, I said, go and ask a competing real estate agent what they think about the property that you're going to buy. And that's where you get free buyer's agency advice.
That's a great idea.
So what you do is, if you're going to buy a property from ABC Real Estate, go to XYZ Real Estate and say, look, I like your property at 10 Smith Street, but I'm also comparing it to the one at 2 Evans Street with XYZ Real Estate. Could you tell me where you think the differences are between the two properties in your opinion? And in 80% of instances, the agent will absolutely talk their own listing up. That's fair enough. But they'll also fall for the sucker punch, which is telling you what the flaws are in the other property and how much it's overpriced by.
Yeah, that's a really clever idea, Peter. I guess the only risk there is that you ring up good guy Gary, who doesn't want to disparage his opponent's listings, and says, no, that's a wonderful property with an excellent price as well.
And the smaller the township, the more likely that is to happen. You're absolutely right, Kieran. I'm not saying it's a foolproof strategy, but if I were buying in a regional town, I'd speak to all the agents. I wouldn't be obvious about the tactic that I'm adopting, where I want one agent to tell me the downside of another agent's listing, but that's what I would be working toward.
Yeah, really great advice, and I'm sure that one of our listeners out there will be able to utilise that sometime in the future. Shifting then to the Sydney market, which is our bread and butter, Peter, let's get a bit of a market wrap on what's been happening this week, particularly our favourite. What's the auction clearance rate down since we last spoke?
Look, had a pretty good week, actually. It had slipped from the sort of 53, 54s, Kieran, down to an even Steven 50% in the last few weeks. Last weekend was the highest auction volumes that we'd seen all year. So it was a big test.
Oh, this was the Super Saturday, right?
Of sorts, yeah. But it was the highest volume of auctions that we'd seen on one day all year and for quite some time, I might add. And it came in at a very healthy 57.1%. So there was some suggestion that the market might have been starting to slide or cool there to some degree. Keeping in mind, these are not auction clearance rates as per the industry wants us to believe them. This is SQM Research's auction clearance rate here, where they have collated the results of every property that was scheduled for auction, whether the agent wants the community to know or not that it did or didn't sell. So that's a very real 57, very hard number there, and that's solid. Equally interesting, 10% more properties sold under the hammer than they did prior. As we know, in recent times, there'd been a trend for more properties to sell prior to auction than there had been selling actually at auction under the hammer. I spoke to a couple of people at board on the weekend. One particular friend and client, he went to bid at an auction with a guide of 1.9, subsequently found out the vendor's reserve was 2.4. When the auctioneer called for a bid, he attempted to offer 1.9, and the auctioneer said, we're not taking any bids under 2 million, even though the auction guide for 4 weeks had been 1.9 million. So he went on to secure that property. It was a good piece of real estate. But yeah, the underquoting is a big part of what's going on out there in the auction market at the moment.
Really interesting anecdote. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to ask, the higher clearance rate on a higher volume, does it indicate that maybe the other agents are starting to learn and they're bringing their prices back into line with where they should be? Or is it an indicator that perhaps some more quality real estate is coming to market? Or is it just the fact that there are still plenty of buyers out there and there's so much property available that people are just committing and saying, you know what, I've had enough of this game, this charade. I just want a house for my family and I.
Yeah, look, there's a sense that we're on the doorstep of winter now. What are we coming up to, sort of first month of autumn is nearly done. Stock will tighten during winter. People that haven't secured the right property during the summer, and they see that you know, the right property is now available in early autumn, and let's grab this once we come out of Easter. I assume daylight saving will finish over Easter, will it?
Yeah, it will.
Yeah, so we'll come out with a sort of a more of a, you know, late autumn wintry feel after the next weekend or two. School holidays during April. You'd think in terms of family homes that any family that did want to sell prior to the spring has probably just about got the property on the market as such. So I think buyers just didn't muck around last week. If I can speak to my client who was at that auction, the competition was not really there for him to pay the price that he ended up paying for the property, but he didn't want to muck around. He just wanted to buy the property and get on with the rest of his life. And I think that attitude took hold last Saturday as people were sick of playing games with agents and frustrated by the whole pricing nonsense, knowing nobody believed the property would sell for 1.9 or 2 or even 2.1. So they got together and got the deal done. But why you would try and tell the marketplace they can buy a property for 1.9 when the vendor's reserve is 2.4 is beyond me.
Yeah, it's a heartless tactic, Peter, and one that I certainly don't agree with. I think really, really interesting results in the market wrap this week, and I'm certainly intrigued to see what happens next week as we have a look through the Sydney property market again. So, Peter, thanks for joining me again this week.
Yeah, thanks, Kieran. All the best.
And thanks to everyone for listening. As always, if you have any questions or anything you'd like us to talk about, please do reach out here to us at Current Market Insights. But until next time, thanks for listening.
Thanks for joining us on the Current Market Insights podcast, brought to you by Harris Partners Real Estate, the podcast providing real estate insights you won't find anywhere else.